I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, I feel like it's at least a 2 cup of coffee morning.
Mm-hmm.
And my cups are 16 ounces each.
I see. I'm going to get my wife a glass coffee cup that as it goes down, it'll alert me to when I can start speaking with her, because there's a certain amount of coffee that she needs to ingest before we're allowed to talk.
I got my brother for Christmas a 16 ounce coffee mug. It's brown, and in giant white letters it says "Coffee makes me poop," and he refuses to use it.
Wow. Well, the sound of that laughter that you hear is Django Wexler, a longtime friend of the show. Had him on a bunch of times, but not in quite a while. And he's got a brand new book out called The Infernal Battalion. Django, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I apologize.
Rather than make a ton of new thousand name jokes, I'm just going to refer people back to the archives.
Yeah, you've covered all the bases in terms of
I think I have thousand names. Yeah.
I think you're pretty set.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So you were going to tell people that you're sick.
I was. I apologize to everyone for the quality of my voice, which is not great right now, but that's okay. You get horse Django. Wait, horse you guys aren't the horsemen. That's a different group, right?
Yeah, we're in the same universe as they are, but no, different rails. That's
I used to do that with SF Signal back when that was.
Yeah, and I for one can't wait for their first episode.
What am I doing on this podcast? Now that I'm horse, I could be but part of the
yes. Group. Exactly.
Now we have to get Bojack Horseman on the show.
Yes, of course. Of course. So Django, this is book 5 in this series.
It is.
For our listeners who maybe have not read the series yet, what can you tell them a little bit about where to start? What's a good overall, explanation of what's going on in your series so far?
You should start at the beginning. Which is The Thousand Names. It's book one. And the series is a sort of Napoleonic military fantasy. So muskets and cannon and cavalry charges and a little bit of magic, but not so much that it sort of overwhelms the more human elements. It's hard to talk much about book 5 without sort of spoiling all the previous books.
When did book 4 come out?
Like a year and a half ago.
Okay, so the incomparable Gail Carriger has talked about this phenomenon. How do you tour and talk about your new book without spoiling things from the past? And she's like, look, get over it. It's the new book. You just have to talk about stuff, Django. You just have to.
I guess that's true. It's just awkward when I do like readings and signings and people, I go to the reading and I see all these people who have just bought copies of book 1. And here I am going to read from book 5 and spoil everything.
You just gotta.
Yeah.
Just my two cents on that subject. I think especially with books, if you're talking about stuff that's happening in book 5 to someone who has not read anything yet, I'm not sure how much of that really means to them now. They're not going to really understand it, because I just saw a Robert Jordan thing where they were talking about something that happened in the later books, and I haven't read any of that. So it didn't mean and I would like to read that series
you
at some point, but
to.
Yeah, I know that's on the long list of ones that I'm working my way through past series that I haven't finished. So I'll get there eventually. But anyway, the point is that I don't think it's too dangerous.
I usually go by whatever they put on the cover copy is okay. So if you've been following the series, you'll know that at the end of book 4, peace had apparently returned to Vordon and our heroes, except that Janos Betvalnik, the inspiring general who has been the source of so much war and contention, had been captured by the demon known as the Beast. And so now
Oh my God, I can't believe you just told us that.
It says it on the cover. What am I supposed to do? Now in book five, Janus has declared himself emperor of the world, essentially, or at least Vordon and Mertz, and sort of dethroned Rhaecynia in the sense, or declared her dethroned. And so everybody has to kind of choose up sides first. Marcus and Winter have a kind of a hard time dealing with that.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. It's fun. Good. I had a really good time with it. It's been kind of an amazing thing that it stuck so close to my outline. Because like I wrote this outline in late 2011 and like I'm used to books just like drifting way off and looking nothing like the outlines, but
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But this is, it's pretty much the story I wrote down in 2011. It's kind of amazing. A million words later.
It's funny you mentioned the muskets and everything, and I realized when your first book came out, it was also at about the same time that Brian McClellan's first book came out.
Within a month. Yes, and
it's they were both being referred to as Flintlock fantasy. I don't know if that's a term that's still getting thrown around. I feel like I haven't heard that term in a little while.
I have.
Yeah. There's a couple other people who qualify in that. Mm-hmm. Adrian Tchaikovsky wrote a great book called The Guns of the Dawn.
Stina wrote one.
I highly recommend.
Stina wrote one.
Yes, Stina Light wrote one. Yeah, I haven't read that one, but people like it very much.
Oh, it got a lot of critical reviews. It's an awesome book.
Yeah, Chris Evans, not Chris Evans, Captain
that's
America.
That's another one
Chris
I haven't read, but I've heard referred to, yeah.
Yes.
I like Brian's books a lot.
I do, actually, too.
Brian and I... It's interesting because I feel like I think I've said this before, so hopefully he won't be mad at me for saying this. It's pretty complimentary to him, but I feel like he and I came in two very different approaches, and I was kind of like following in the footsteps of George R.R. Martin, who was like my ideal when I started out writing these books, and his books are much more in the kind of Brandon Sanderson vein.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so it's kind of two very different approaches to the same subject material, which makes sense. I mean, I know he's worked with Brandon, and obviously,
sure,
Brandon's amazing. So,
and to tie it back to what John
said, he takes that as a compliment.
Yeah, and to tie it back to what John said, Brandon was influenced and inspired by Robert Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
of course. Yeah. So it's two different takes on the Flintlock fantasy, yeah. But. Yeah, but it was funny because I remember we were already doing the show at that point, and I think we had both of you on probably within a couple of weeks of each other because your books came out right at the same time and it's the same. So I remember that was like a big thing.
Ironically, I think that he and I are going to be on a podcast together for the first time in like a week. I think on the Grim Tidings podcast. So if I can plug that, I don't know when it comes out. We're recording it in like a week.
Cool.
I will also say my standard thing about Flintlock fantasy is I like to think of it as less Flintlock specific and more like non-medieval fantasy, which there's just like increasingly more of. So it's like, I'm really glad to see like less everything is knights and castles.
Right. Right. Well, it makes sense. It's like move it ahead a bit. And now that's right. Adds a whole other element to it. So cool.
Move it to another part of the world. There's a lot of the world that's not 13th century England. So you know,
right.
Use it.
Exactly. Well, very cool. Well, if you haven't bought any of Django's books, as he said, start with book one, which is The Thousand Names. And if you have read them, go get the new
one. Now you can get five in a row and just binge.
Yes.
I also say that my middle grade series, which starts with The Forbidden Library, book four, which is the finale, came out last month. So that's The Fall of the Readers. And so you can now binge that series as well. And it's great. It's about a girl. Well, I shouldn't say it's great. It sounds
No, you're allowed. It's your book. You're allowed to
it's
say
fine.
That.
I had fun with it.
Good.
It's about a girl who goes to live with her creepy uncle and sneaks into his magical library and finds out that she can do magic. And then he tells her, you're a wizard and you get to be my apprentice. And then she starts to wonder if he's really sketchy and is using her to do terrible things.
Cool. I will put that on the list, Django, because since the summer, my son and I, who's 11 and who's autistic, he reads well, though we've been working our way through Harry Potter, and we're actually making pretty good progress. We're already about a third of the way through book three. So once we get through all the Harry Potters, maybe we'll give the Forbidden Library a shot there.
That's about the right. Yeah. I when I wrote it, I had no idea what I was doing in terms of middle grade. So I was like, I'm just going to think of like Harry Potter book one as my like target in terms of diction. Mm-hmm. And it worked out, you know, so that's about the level, you know, if your kids like Harry Potter book one, then that they're about the right age
Have you seen the thing online about there was a huge Harry Potter fan who kept trying to get their friend to read Harry Potter. The friend finally broke down to read it, but illegally downloaded the books online and got books that had been tampered with. And didn't realize this.
I have not heard this. That sounds awesome.
And starts texting the friend, you know, questions like, you know, this seems way more adult and serious than I thought it would. Because in the later books, apparently, whoever this person who had doctored the books started having, you know, like people having sex at school at Hogwarts and all this kind of stuff. And there was Harry and what's the kid with the blonde hair?
Draco.
Like a thing going on between them and all this kind
of
stuff.
Of course.
And it's just tripping this person out. And the person who actually loved Harry Potter allowed it to continue happening because they just thought it was hilarious.
That's the best.
And documented all of their conversations online.
That's awesome. I have to look that up. My favorite was Cracked a while back. One of their guys who had never either read the Harry Potter books or seen the movies and knew nothing about it, watched the trailers for all seven or I guess eight movies and like tried to explain the plot based only on the trailers and knowing like stuff from pop culture. And so... But he got really hung up on the fact that Dumbledore like is a different guy in movie two because Michael Gambon died. And so he's like, so this is new beardy guy who seems to have replaced old beardy guy. But
I think you have it flipped. Michael Gambon replaced the other guy.
Oh, sorry. Have I forgotten the guy who died?
I can't remember his name now. We all know who he is.
That's disrespectful.
We all know who he is.
Yes,
Dumbledore.
Exactly.
He's Dumbledore.
Well, anyway, my son likes those books because number one, they say, you know, stupid and shut up. And, you know, he's like, oh, they said shut up. You know, so he enjoys that, you know, they're mean to each other. And you know, he's a bit of a
kid's heart.
Yes, he's a bit of an Anglophile because he loved like the Thomas the Tank Engine stuff. So he loves that everybody is named like Neville and, you know, a very like British name. So he digs that too. So cool. But yeah, we'll give yours a shot when we're all done. Cool. All right. Okay. Well, let's kind of move it ahead and we'll go on to our picks of the week.
And before we get into those picks of the week, John, our friend Gail Carriger has a new podcast called 20 Minute Delay that she wants to tell all of our listeners about. Take it away, Gail.
I'm Gail Carriger, and I travel a lot. Or I thought I did until I met Piper, who travels more than I do. And we are both super travel dorks. So we thought, let's get together and talk about travel hacks, tips, tricks, and horror stories. Check us out on 20 Minute Delay, a new podcast about travel.
And now I get to say it. Let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Django, do you have a pick ready to go?
So what's the procedure? Does it have to be a specific type of thing?
It's like the Squeakcast. It can be anything at all that you are loving and want to share with people.
Huh.
I can go first and you can
go
think
first.
Of it.
Let me think for a second.
Okay, I'm Patrick. I'll go first because I'm going to pick actually one of the things that I picked for my best of the year. And because since we recorded that episode, season two of this show came out and I watched that last week. And that is Travelers season two, because I picked season one as one of my favorite things of the year for our year end show. And season two went on Netflix like literally a week later. and I watched it and I thought it was even better than season one. I loved it. It is so good. And I forgot, one of the things I forgot about it is that it is a, it is that Vancouver sci-fi club of all like the sort of Vancouver shows. Cause I forgot, like, oh yeah, this is the, like the creators are Stargate people. It's like Brad Wright, I believe is the one creator's name. Cause I watched all of Stargate. So all the names are familiar. It's like Andy Makita. So a lot of the producers and directors and writers are Stargate alumni, a lot of the actors on it. So more guest roles, but the, Amanda Tapping has a recurring role on it as a guest star. She also directed a couple of the episodes of this season, so that was pretty cool. And then
she has cut a swath as a director now. Like she's cut out that whole area of her career being a director and writer and producer and that kind of good stuff. So
yes, and has a fairly it's a guest role, a minor role, but a pretty significant one at that. So that was cool to see her pop up this season. Also a bunch of actors from Continuum, a couple of those people that were on that, another Vancouver show. So if you like those kind of Vancouver sci-fi shows like Stargate, like Continuum, you will see a lot of familiar faces. And I just think it's so well written, such a cool concept with the time travel done in a very unique way. And I just really care about these characters and just really good. So season two just went even a step ahead of season one. So they're both seasons are now up on Netflix. I think it's like 12 episodes each season, about 42 minutes per episode, 45 minutes per episode, whatever it is. Really good. If you're looking for a sci-fi show to binge, that gets my highest recommendation. I love it. So there you go. Traveler
season. Because I have been binging sci-fi shows lately.
I think you'll like it. I think it's very intelligently written. The characters are developed really well. You end up really liking these characters. It's good. It's really, I like it a lot. So I think you'll dig it. So there you go. All right, Django, are you ready with a pick now?
Yes. I have two. So speaking of time travel, I'm in the middle of watching Netflix Dark, which is about time travel and morose Germans. And it's great, basically. You know, you should watch it in the original German with subtitles. I'm a stickler for original language audio.
I was just going to ask that question because I've seen a lot of really good reviews of that show. And almost every review says, like, watch it in German with the English subtitles. I mean, don't do the dub.
I mean, for me, after years and years of watching anime, I can't even deal with dubs. Like, and that may just be because I've trained my brain to parse subtitles really fast, and it doesn't bother me at all. But like, there's not even a question. But in this case, obviously, it's just better when the actors are the original actors. Like, no offense to many hardworking dub actors, but like, you know, I tend to prefer it that way. I actually have friends who are dub actors, so I shouldn't like go be too hard on them. American dubs of anime have gotten enormously better since the 90s. But
yeah, think.
I still prefer the original. So that's great. It's time travel. It's morose Germans in a forest trying to deal with abducted children. My only problem is I have trouble telling everyone apart. So you may need a chart for the characters because there's a lot of them. And then there are like younger versions and older versions. And it gets very confusing.
Cool.
So I recommend that. And then book-wise, the most recent book I read that I want to plug is Nicholas Eames's Kings of the Wild, which made a pretty big splash this year when it came out, and it's great. I think I came a little bit late to that, but it's like, I don't know, how do I describe it? It's a world in which fantasy adventuring groups are basically rock bands, and they go out on tour and they go into the wild and kill monsters. And an old band has to reunite to go save someone's daughter. And it's great. And I was a little worried going into it that it would be kind of too, play it too straight, because that world is kind of inherently a little ridiculous. But, like, he plays it just right with, like, just enough tongue-in-cheek that, like, you're not taking it too seriously, but not so much that it's, like, just a parody and silly. And that you don't care about the characters. So I like that a lot.
That's one that is high on my list. I actually have an arc of that that was sent to me when it came out. And I'm like, ooh, this one looks good. And I've read a couple good reviews. And another author friend said, like, if you are a 40-something former metalhead who maybe played a little Dungeons and Dragons in your life, this is the book for you. So I'm
exactly. Like, if you're the guy who always wanted a van with, like, a badass dragon with lightning bolts airbrushed on the side, this is your book.
Well, that's who I am.
they actually sent me an arc as well, and I didn't get to it, and now I will forever regret that, because I could have been the guy who knew about something cool early, and I wasn't. So now I'm the guy who read something cool a year after it came out or something.
Well, anyway, I understand. That's hard to keep up with all this stuff. But cool. Well, yeah, I'm gonna check that one out too. Patrick, what's your pick this week?
So I was listening to the Wheel of Time books, going back through them as we've talked about. And I finished them in December, just in time for a new James S.A. Corey book to come out called Persepolis Rising. And that is
that's my pick. At the top of my stack.
That's my pick. It's awesome.
Persepolis Rising is your pick? Cool. I just finished Nemesis Games.
I saw that. You gave it like 144 stars on Goodreads.
I did. It took me a while to get through that one because I'd started it before the holidays, and I do all my audiobook listening on my commute, and then I didn't commute for like a week and a half, so I kind of didn't listen to it for a good week and a half. So there was like a little bit of a pause in between, but I just finished it the other day, and what can you say about those books? They get better with each one. And
you know, my secret is for audiobooks is chores. Like if you put your audiobook on and do chores, you like if you're in that situation where you don't have your regular commute, you'll be amazed how many chores you get done.
I also usually listen while I'm folding laundry.
Yeah, I do that too.
But I have to try to work it into other chores as well, because sometimes my mind folding laundry is like the same thing for long enough where I don't have to like think at all. Some of my other chores, I guess, I have to think too much and then I lose place.
Dishes,
in the book,
I can do dishes.
Yeah, that's what I have to start doing.
At work every Monday, I essentially spend the entire day manually updating the external marketing database with spreadsheets. And it's a very monotonous and repetitive task. And I just have to keep doing the same steps over and over and over again. It doesn't take a whole lot of brain power. But it's an unfortunate thing that I have to do every week. And so I essentially on Mondays will listen to an audiobook for about 8.5 hours.
That's amazing.
That's how I burn through so many books in a month. Yeah.
Cool. That's really good. Cool. All right. So those are some good picks from everybody there. Now our main topic today is Star Wars The Last Jedi and the sort of split public reaction to it, let's say. And let's put a spoiler warning out there now.
Can you put the pork noise like right there when you say spoiler warning?
If you listen to the show and you haven't gone to see The Last Jedi yet, that's very surprising to me. I'll just say.
And you intend to.
Yes, and you intend to. So you could stop listening now if you have not seen it yet, because I'm sure some spoilers are going to come up. I feel like this can be a 10-episode discussion. We're going to have probably a fairly truncated discussion of this. But I will say Patrick and I had a sort of spoiler-free Last Jedi chat a month ago. And it was very funny because we had that discussion the Saturday after it came out. So the public, we'll say, backlash, we did not know about yet. And you and I both enjoyed it and just talked sort of very, you know, generally about the movie. And then everything since then has happened. So Django, I know you, I read a blog post that you wrote about this, which I would direct people to.
I was like pent up with not being able to talk about it on Twitter because I didn't want to spoil it for people. So I didn't do it. And then finally I was like, I can't not talk about Star Wars. And so I wrote like 2,500 words on my blog and those like spoiler warnings.
Now I read the post and you said that you enjoyed the movie, but had your, criticisms of it that, held you back from thinking it was like an amazing movie. You just sort of liked it.
It's hard. I think it's very mixed. There's some stuff in there that I just absolutely love and some stuff that I didn't like as much. It's also, for me, it was much stronger on character and themes than it was on like plot and world building, which is hard because those are the things that I like a lot of the time. I mean, among my friends, the reaction that I've observed is that, you know, the people who care most about character and thematic resonance like the movie the most. And, you know, I try to restrain myself. Like, I don't want to be comic book guy, you know, from The Simpsons, the worst episode ever, that guy, who says, like, why don't the TIE fighters do this? Like, but like,
why didn't we see Luke Skywalker pulling a Star Destroyer out of orbit and crashing it into the planet using the Force?
No, for me,
that
was
a
like
literal. When... That was a literal complaint that someone's had online.
Oh Jesus! No, I'm talking about stuff like when they're chasing the ships. Why don't they send out the fighters to catch them?
Yeah.
Kylo Ren seemed to do pretty well. So, like, why not send the hundreds of fighters that you have in your ships? I don't know, stuff like that. I would say probably my biggest complaint is that, like, the First Order as villains are just jokes. Like, they're completely worthless. Their general is like a punching bag that everyone dunks on, which, like, is fine. I mean, we don't want to glorify space Nazis, but, like, you know, comparing it to the original trilogy, I feel like there aren't the scenes that establish them as, like, actually scary. And so it feels like it doesn't mean anything when people beat them. Like, my comparison is, if you compare Last Jedi to Empire, which obviously everyone does, at the beginning of Empire, everyone goes out, you know, Luke and all the pilots go out to fight the Imperial advance, and Luke heroically takes down one of the AT-ATs, and he takes down another one with his lightsaber, and the end result is it doesn't stop them at all, but they throw away, you know, dozens of lives, and they still barely get out and can't defend the base at all. The Empire is just, like, crushing and unstoppable. Whereas, like, at the beginning of Last Jedi, the First Order brings in their biggest, baddest ship, and, like, Poe takes it out with a handful of fighters. And I'm like, great. So later in the movie, like, Snoke's ship warps in, and it's another gigantic, like, ship, and we're clearly supposed to think it's super intimidating. And I'm like, you just blew up a gigantic ship, like, with, like, you know, 6 X-Wings and 10 bombers. Like, so why am I supposed to think this is scary?
What about the very first scene from The Force Awakens?
Did that establish
them as a scary thing? Like, they show up, they wipe out everybody, they capture everybody, even the prisoners get slaughtered. It's like they're all dead.
It's more like, again, you can compare that to, like, the scene at the beginning of A New Hope, where, like, the Tantive IV getting swallowed by the giant Star Destroyer is just such a great visual. And then the door breaks open, then the stormtroopers fight the rebels, and the rebels are fighting back but losing. Whereas, like, the beginning of Force Awakens feels more like a war crime. Like, they just come down and slaughter some unarmed villain.
Right, and so, the only one who's intimidated, does that not establish them as bad guys?
It's not about establishing them as bad guys. Like, they're clearly evil. They're clearly bad guys. That's done. Like, they do a great job of that. It's establishing them as at all competent. I feel like you need the scenes where the bad guys show how competent they are against, like, randos, so that, like, when our heroes fight them and do really well, it's, like, impressive.
Well, right? I think it comes down to a difference in culture now versus then.
Mm-hmm.
Now our villains can't be competent. They have to, like, just look at everything that we do now. It's like they have to be easily defeated, and the heroes have to be these huge archetypes.
There's a great Cracked article that David Wong did years ago about how all our superhero movies are basically about heroes beating the crap out of, like, laughably outmatched opponents. Like, you know, we root for Batman against the Joker, but, like, the Joker is, like, a sort of homeless crazy guy in clown makeup, and Batman is a hulking, muscle-bound billionaire with, like, infinite resources. And so it's kind of like, oh, I wonder who's going to win that one.
Well, I think the Heath Ledger version gave him a run for his money.
Well, I mean, they always do, because, like, people obviously want to make movies. It's just when you take a step back and think about it, you're just like, yeah, like, why is this guy the hero? Like, I don't know. It's just a long way from Die Hard, where it's like, you know, crappy little cop versus like well-heeled, highly trained terrorist.
Well, I think that when you look at Hollywood, though, we get more and more dumbed down versions of things. You know, Transformers is this huge multi-billion dollar blockbuster machine. And I can't stand to watch any of their movies. So I'm like, where is the money coming from? Who is watching these movies?
Max Gladstone has this theory about Transformers that, like, Michael Bay is trying to see how far he can go before he loses the fan base and has not, like, managed it yet. You have to ask him about it, but he has this whole thing about how, like, because he's actually watched these movies, and he's like, in every movie it gets like more nonsensical and more obvious that the heroes are actually not heroes, and like it still doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I wanted to kind of talk about with all of this, so, you know, I would recommend everybody go and read Django's post. It's at his website, djangowexler.com, and kind of get his thoughts, you know, in written form. But I was sort of surprised, not that I expected everybody to love it, but I was very surprised with how divisive The Last Jedi has been.
I'm not surprised at all.
I guess I'm not, maybe that's not the right way to put it. I am fall down on the side that I enjoyed it very much. And I saw it twice and liked it both times, liked it better the second time even.
I haven't either. I couldn't make it happen.
Yeah. I managed to pull off going a second time. I saw The Force Awakens twice. I only saw Rogue One once, and I would have liked to have seen that at least a second time too. But it seems like I guess I'm not surprised, because I didn't know what I was expecting from this film, but it was different than what maybe I expected. But at the same time, I'm someone who listens to a lot of the Star Wars podcasts and reads a lot of blogs about Star Wars. So nothing was that shocking to me in terms of Rey's parentage and Snoke being nobody, because if you've been following the stuff that's been aligned with Lucasfilm, that's kind of what they've been hinting at over the past year anyway, that it's like, hey, don't expect too much about Snoke, because like he's just a bad guy. Don't get too caught up in his history, and don't get too caught up in Rey's history either, you know, because that's not really what this is about.
Someone described it as Rian Johnson stomping on J.J. Abrams' mystery box, because J.J. Abrams loves this, you know, you set up the elaborate mystery box and then you have no idea what's inside, but like, who cares? Rian Johnson is like, nothing. Yeah. Nothing.
The other side of that is people are complaining, John, that the original movies, the two original trilogies, were all, you know, basically written by the same mind, the same person, had the same person guiding it all. And the complaint against The Last Jedi is that this is what happens when you have one person write the first movie and a second person write and control the second movie and not pay any respect or attention to what happened in the first movie.
See, I disagree with that, but I understand.
I disagree with that too.
I understand that complaint, but I think it's not valid, because I think the thematic point of the movie that they were clearly setting up in A New Hope, or not in the Force Awakens, right? Like, so you have this three movie trilogy, right? And so Force Awakens is about a bunch of people trying to live up to their illustrious forebearer. Right. And in the same way, the movie itself has to live up to its illustrious forebearers. Right. So this is not a coincidence. This is good theming. And then the second thing is about those people grappling with the question of whether this is really a good thing, whether continuing in the footsteps of the people who came before you is a good idea. We come down on Rey comes down on the side of no, and Kylo Ren comes down on the side of yes. So like you have Kylo Ren, who's still obsessed with Luke Skywalker, who's a, you know, descendant of the Skywalker legacy, and he's now set up as the bad guy. And you have Rey, who is not a descendant of anyone important, who did not in fact get trained by Luke Skywalker, who is, you know, sort of free of all those past things, right? And so the conflict between those two gives us our final movie, and, you know, the theme is, you know, breaking free of the past.
Yeah, I agree, and I guess I'm just, to Patrick's point, I am sort of surprised about that there wasn't an overall arc established, because it does, from everything that I've read and heard, is that Rian Johnson had free reign. Like, he's the only writer credited on it. It's like, that's his story. And what's funny now is that now that JJ is going to do episode 9,
I wonder what's going to happen. Is he going to come back and be like, actually, Rey's parents are super important and Snoke's not dead?
Well, and Rian Johnson has said as much in interviews since then, that it's like, hey, look, they can, you know, JJ can go and do, you know, what he wants with it from there, because, you know, you can say that it's like, oh, Kylo was lying to her, or they were wrong. Like, it's sure. Not, there's room left for interpretation from that if you want it to be. So yes, he could turn around and be like, guess what? Luke is actually your dad, you know, or whatever.
I will say the thing about Snoke, you know, I don't need Snoke to be some like figure from the past. But like, I kind of want to see what happened between him and Kylo Ren.
Oh, sure.
On the Jedi Temple. Like, I was kind of shocked that we didn't get to see that. That felt like a missing piece to me.
Well, and Kylo is later. And Kylo is the leader of the Knights of Ren.
Where yeah, are who have knights? Not made any appearance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, what I've been thinking about with that, and I'm of two minds on it, it's like, all right, well, maybe JJ will explore that in 9, or maybe we're just going to get books about that. Maybe the Snoke book is going to get announced next week, and that will, and that's another whole conversation, and one that I've heard bandied about on some of the Star Wars podcasts that I listen to, is that I am someone who is following all the books. I haven't kept up with the comics. The comics I've kind of let go over the past year, but I've read almost all the books at this point, just about. Some of the young adults I've missed, but for the most part, I've read all the books. And it is a little disappointing how now Rogue One was kind of, you know, kind of got our hopes up because they did incorporate some things from Rebels and some things from the books, you know, little Easter eggs that was really helped with fans. But, you know, Last Jedi did not. There were some things in the books leading up to this. You know, a big example is Laura Dern's character, who was in the Leia Princess of Alderaan book. You know, they knew each other when they were 16, and Laura Dern had no idea that was going on. So they don't. So it's a little, for me, who has devoted himself to the canon books, to kind of the filmmakers are not really following anything with that.
Yeah.
It's just the books and everything are being written around the movies, and that's fine, but it's a little disappointing.
At the same time, I feel like there's important information in the books that isn't in the movies, which, like, the whole political situation with the First Order and the Resistance and the New Republic, right. Is, I know, but only because I read the books. It's not in Force Awakens.
Right. And John and I have talked about that in the past. There was, like, even with Rogue One, I there was a lot of misses for me. And he basically said, well, that was covered in this book. And I was, I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
If it's not in the movie,
I feel like the movies need to be able to stand on their own.
I agree.
And
they absolutely.
Yeah. I think Rogue One is a much more enjoyable movie if you read the James Luceno Catalyst book. It's really nice. But
sure.
Yeah.
I buy that.
Yeah. Anyway, we're running out of time, and I feel like we could just do another hour easy on this.
I just want to throw out there really quickly that I feel the parallel here is the original Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. Gene Roddenberry did Star Trek the Motion Picture, which is a long-ass boring movie.
It certainly is.
Nicholas Meyer did The Wrath of Khan, which is a fast-paced, exciting movie that everybody to this day still talks about.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like eventually that's where we're going to kind of get with these two Star Wars movies. It's like the Star Wars or Star Trek the Motion Picture reestablished Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Force Awakens reestablished Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And both films were kind of lovingly dedicated to the original material. And then both second films broke away from the original material and did something different.
Definitely.
Star Trek Generations crapped all over it. No, but actually, so if you look at the thematic stuff I was talking about earlier, if movie three is about sort of breaking free of the past and embracing new stuff, then what that means is from here on out, we're doing new cool things in Star Wars. And like Disney clearly is doing that. And so I feel like this trilogy is their setup to a Star Wars universe of movies and books and tie-ins forever.
I agree.
One a year for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
Till the end of time.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, which, you know, when you pay $4 billion for something, you got to get your money's worth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, so once again, Django has got a brand new book out called The Infernal Battalion. So go and pick that up because it is out now. He's also got the Forbidden Library, The Fall of the Readers, which is also out as well. Django, any con appearances coming up or any other projects you want to tell our listeners about?
I mean, not in the near future. If you go to my blog, I wrote a little bit about what's coming up for me, but basically I have two new series starting up, a YA series and an adult series from Tortine and Orbit respectively. And they don't have titles yet, which is a little annoying because I can't really refer to them in a coherent way. But so, you know, with both of my series wrapping up, people keep asking me what's next. So if you go to my website and look at my blog, there's a blog post called What Are You Doing Next Year? And it explains what's going on there.
Where's your blog?
That should be lots of fun.
And where's
it's at DjangoWexler.com. And then you can see it says blog. Okay. Also, if you go to DjangoWexler.com under the blog subhead, you'll see my Disney Battle Royale, where I'm doing a giant tournament of 150 odd Disney owned characters. So if you have ever wondered whether, you know, Boba Fett would beat Doug from Up, then you can come and vote in our thing. Or, you know, whether Cinderella can take down Captain America.
Nice. That sounds awesome. Cool.
We're trying to help out. We figure they're going to need something to top Infinity Gauntlet once they're done with that.
Absolutely. For us, I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the episode too, but if you dig the show and you dig interviews with folks like Django, please consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can back us for $1 a month or whatever works for you. Thank you to everybody that already does that. It really helps support the show and helps us put out good quality shows each week. So thank you for the people that are already backing us. And if you aren't and would like to, go to patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick.
Since I'm about to hit stop recording, I just wanted to say that I'm pretty sure that Django loves the trailer for Battle Angel.
Oh, God. Those eyes, it's creepy. Max Gladstone thinks they're doing it on purpose, so I'm reserving judgment because maybe they're doing an Uncanny Valley thing deliberately, but if they're just trying to copy the anime look, it's the worst thing in the universe.
And that's it, John.
All righty. Have a good week, everybody.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.